TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand.
One, two, three.
It's Mackie and Judd with Rami.
Hey everyone, it's Phil Mackie here, and I want to welcome you to a special episode of the Mackie and Judd with Rami show. This will be quite a bit different than what you normally hear on our show, which, let's be honest, mostly consists of Judd's conspiracy theories, Rami's one-liners, and me ranting about robot umpires. So, just a little background here before we dive into the show. Ryan Saunders reached out earlier this year and said, hey, let's meet up and use our platforms to do some good, because there's a lot of people struggling with grief or, in our case, losing a parent at a younger age than you probably imagine. So let's do a podcast episode and talk about it. So that's what we did. I think everyone's pretty well aware of what Ryan has grinded through the last few years, losing his dad, Flip Saunders, to Hodgkin's lymphoma in 2015, and now trying to carry on Flip's legacy in his own way. And as some of you know, my mom passed away also to blood cancer at the age of 61 in August of 2017. And so Ryan and I are sort of part of this unfortunate club, and we figure a lot of other people are in the same club, or maybe you're going through something different in your life, and we decided, let's sit down and let's talk about it all. So give it a listen. Let us know what your thoughts are. Ryan doesn't have social media, but you can tweet me or find me on Instagram, at Phil Mackey, on both platforms, or email pmackey, M-A-C-K-E-Y, at scorenorth.com, and we'd love to hear your thoughts.
You lost your dad, yep. Flip, to Hodgkin's lymphoma 4 years ago at age 60. Mm-hmm. I lost my mom, Jerry, to T-cell prolymphocytic leukemia 2 years ago, as we sit here and record this, to she was 61. Mm-hmm. And so I think you and I maybe have met in passing before, but this is really, like, in the last month or two, it's the first time you and I have ever had a conversation like this. But you and I went to the University of Minnesota around the same time. We're around the same age. We lost parents around the same time. And I think there's probably a lot of people out there, Minnesotans or just people around the country, that have gone through a similar experience, lost a parent more suddenly than they thought, were younger than they wanted to be when they lost a parent. And so that's where this conversation stems from, I guess.
Yeah, and it's like we talked about, you know, initially that when we talked about doing something like this, it's, you know, everybody goes through hard times, and everybody has, you know, some sort of form of loss throughout their lives. But, you know, losing a parent at a young age, especially a parent you're so close to, you almost become a part of a club, not wanting to be a part of that club.
Yes.
Where you connect with people, other people. And, you know, if you try to honor them in a way that you feel you can shed light on what people may be going through, if they're, you know, somebody else is going through a similar situation that you and I went through right now, where they see, you know, the health possibly deteriorating, you know, and things kind of look bleak. One can try to give them hope, but then you can also try to tell them, you know, show them that, hey, if, you know, things do, you know, go down that road that you are, it's pretty unimaginable. You know, there can be light at on the other side.
Yeah. I think let's just spend the next however many minutes just asking each other questions.
Yeah, yeah.
And I kind of figured the structure I sort of had in my mind was, let's go sort of three phases. Let's start with, all right, the moment that you heard about your parents' diagnosis, and it's just a shock to the system. Mm-hmm. And then part two, as you sort of realize this is not going in the direction that you want. And then part three, that light at the end of the tunnel where now we're talking about legacy and carrying someone's torch. So I'll throw the first question now. I mean, where do you remember where you were and when news came down in your family that, okay, this is going to be a battle?
Yeah, I was about 50 feet away from where we are right here. And, you know, as we're in my office here at Mayo Clinic Square, across from the Target Center, I was in, you know, my old assistant coaching office about 50 feet from here. My dad had gotten some, basically, you know, final kind of results, you know, from Mayo, and there was a little bit of an overlap where my mom had known before that for like a couple days, but he didn't want to know because it was right around draft time, and he wanted to be focused on all that. So I was over there, and I saw my dad go into a little conference room with a doctor, and you know, they were in there for a while. So I you know, you have a feeling that something isn't right. And then he actually ended up kind of telling me, it's really, now that I think about it, it's pretty blurry, because, you know, I think you try to block some of those things out. I guess in some of those moments where you hear such, you know, all the negative news and the things where, you know, the times where your life changed, you know, probably for the worse is what you're thinking. So it's, it was hard to grasp at the time, you know, really what was going on or what the next steps were, because your mind automatically races to the worst.
Yeah.
So, which, I mean, I'm sure you can probably attest to. I mean, when did you find out that your mother?
I was sitting in the parking lot at Hubbard Broadcasting. Mm-hmm. I had just gotten in my car to go home for the day, and so sort of similarly, my mom always thought about my life and schedule before her own, and yeah. Only child syndrome.
Yeah.
And so she sat on the news all day, but waited for my show to be done and waited for my work day to be done so that I wouldn't have to think about it. I mean, when you think back, it's like, mm-hmm. I wouldn't have worked that day or whatever. But like the fact that she was just diagnosed with, and at the time they didn't know how bad it was going to be. It took like 2 months to figure out just how bad the cancer was. But to make it even worse, and we always have sort of a funny spin on things, even mm-hmm. in the darkest moments. So she was a Democrat, and it was election night, 2016. Mm-hmm. And I remember, so I went to the hospital to visit her because she called me from the hospital and said, "Hey, I have leukemia, and they're doing some further testing." And, you know, we both cried on the phone.
Yeah.
And she makes the joke as we're sitting in there. She goes, we're watching like CNN coverage or whatever. And again, she's a Democrat. And she goes, "This is so crappy. This is the worst day of my life. And I was diagnosed with leukemia."
Yeah.
I mean, and so like, I don't know. I'll never forget like being in the car and then being in the hospital while she's being diagnosed and joking around about it, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's, I'm glad you bring that up, because I think it's really unique to the strength that you can see in people, when they are hit with that type of news, and when it's actually happening to them, you know, they may take the news better than the loved ones. Cause I remember my dad saying, you know, like when I, you know, kind of got emotional, he's like, "What are you worried about?" He's like, "I'm coming back. I'm going to be in great shape. We're going to be rolling, you know, next year. We're going to get this thing, you know, built up, you know," talking about the team. And he's like, "Hey, we just got, you know, you guys just got to pick up the slack for me a little bit this summer." He's like, I'm good.
Yeah.
And he was so positive. And like now, as I reflect on it a little bit, that moment of kind of finding out, you know, you see the strength and you see the things, the reasons you were so close with that parent.
Yeah. How hard was it for you? You know, you and your dad being public figures and having to go through mm-hmm. this both on your end and on his end, mm-hmm. but also it being such a public thing. Yeah. And I mean, like for you, there's a lot of Timberwolves fans that felt like they were along for the ride too, because they had seen Flip for 30 plus years, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what was it like from just like, okay, I'm going through this in my life, but also I have this very high demanding public job.
Yeah.
And you're trying to balance those two things.
Yeah. I mean, I took some time away at the time, you know, during that time, and it was about right now, which is, you know, it'll be 4 years October 25th, which is crazy to even say, but or 3 years, it all blurs together now. Yeah,
2016.
Yeah,
okay.
So it all blurs together, but the with that, you end up. Like everything kind of feels, you know, the weather's the same, the mood's the same, just in general. Like you're going back to school, you're going back to work, things like that. What we tried to do at that time was we really wanted our, you know, kind of privacy, and we knew we wanted he would want his privacy. So we didn't really let it be known to people. We told some select, people we trusted, which, you know, news never really got out till it got really bad, and we realized, hey, we need a miracle, we need more prayers, mm-hmm. and that's when we kind of, you know, allowed it to be known to the public here. Yeah.
How did you brace once it took that turn and you realized, okay, we've been positive and we've been looking at this as from the as bright side as we possibly can, and now we're in need a miracle phase. You know, how did you start to brace, and what was that like for you?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty much just spend as much time with him as possible. You know, even if he wasn't as responsive as you'd think, because he ultimately passed from you know an infection, complications. So you know,
likewise, that's usually how I feel like. Yeah. It's never. It's always something that your immune system and the guard comes down
exactly.
And something else.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, you wish you could have more of those conversations towards the end of, you know, their lives. I mean, I'm sure you can speak to that as well. But you kind of just brace, you almost brace for the crash.
Yeah.
You brace for, you know, what's to come. And then you start thinking about a lot of, okay, you know, what's next for me? What's next for my family? What's next for everything? Like, what's the point? That type of thing. I mean, you enlightened me on how you felt that, because I'm always interested to hear how other people feel.
Yeah. So we actually had some of the best conversations that we've ever had. So it wound up being, they told her 7.5 months, and it wound up being like 8 or 9 months. And we wound up, I think we both knew, let's be positive and let's be as solution focused as possible. Let's go on. If this treatment doesn't work, let's go on to the next one, and let's do our own research. Let's look at all options. And so we had that lane over here, but we were also aware enough of the circumstances to know, let's not be Pollyanna here. Let's not pretend like this might not be the last year or the last 4th of July or excuse me, we didn't get to Thanksgiving, but, and so we actually had amazing conversations that I'm glad that we had about life, and I asked her for advice, and I just like going through in preparation for sitting down with you, I even just went through, I remember taking a bunch of notes.
Mm-hmm.
I would just be sitting in a hospital room at Mayo Clinic, and you know, she would be trying to rest as much as she could, but whenever she was awake and it was just me and her in the room, I would ask, at first I was a little bit like, God, do I want to ask questions through the lens of like, you're not going to be here anymore? Is that going to make her mad? But she was always okay with it.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to read a couple. I just pulled up one of these documents. After she died, I sort of put some of this stuff together, and I asked her two questions. What would you consider your life's mission, and how can you close, how can your close family and friends honor you after you pass away? And she said her mission is be there for people, help people, and empower people.
Mm-hmm.
And animals, because she was an animal lover too. Grew up on farms. So be there for people, help people, empower people, quite simply. And it's like when you ask someone that question, I was sort of taken aback by how much she had thought about that in her life, because her answer was instant.
Definitely.
What's your life mission? And she said, and she thought about it for a second and said, help people, be there for people, and empower people.
Yeah.
And then I asked her, how can other people and me honor your legacy and carry your torch? And she said, be sure to give back, be there for people, volunteer, be a good person. Sometimes it's inconvenient, but you just do it anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes you feel good too. Enjoy life, take a step back, and always have perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's, you know, entering that arena is a tough one, because it does, you have to let your guard down, and you have to be vulnerable, but you also have to, you know, be aware that the individual going through, obviously, the pain in their body and just the changes, you're not being necessarily being negative. You're in a way almost being realistic with what is kind of happening, but you're kind of showing that, hey, I'm losing a little bit of hope. And you got, like, I'd agree with you. You have to get over that as a loved one, as a family member. Mm-hmm. And you have to, because at the end of the day, and at the end of, you know, whenever the passing happens, or they push through it, you're going to have those conversations. And like you have all those notes that you can look back on. You know, I thought about when you were talking, I thought about something I've said a lot, is that, you know, people ask what I learned from my dad. And I say, you know, I never really just asked him questions. But I never knew I never knew the things that he talked about were lessons until he passed. And now I find myself, you know, so many things that he used to talk about and how he used to deal with people and, you know, what values he had as a husband, as a father, as a family man. I'm seeing those, like, you know, I have a 3-month-old son now, and seeing, you know, how my dad kind of was with me, I'm able to do that with my son. Yeah. And like, I never felt at all like my dad was a father that was just gone all the time. I always felt like he was present, even when he was home.
I feel like that's amazing.
Yeah.
And maybe rare in that profession.
It is. So it's just those little things are, you know, and I hear him, you know, constantly in my head, you know, hey, remember, your greatest strength is your greatest weakness if you can't control it. And I never really understood it until he passed. And, you know, I find myself asking players, hey, what's your greatest strength? And more times than not, the player is, it's going to be his greatest strength, which he's probably right about, because, you know, most guys are self-aware. But then you also bring up to them, hey, that can also be a weakness. If the strength that you care so much, I'd say that's my greatest strength. I care so much, but that's also my weakness too, because I care so much.
Yeah.
And so it's little things like that that, you know, hey, you don't realize their lessons until they're gone, and they can't necessarily keep bestowing all those upon you.
Yeah. Is there anything, I know that there's things on my list, even though we did have a bunch of conversations. Is there anything that if you could get one or two questions, and I think for me it would actually be more about family history stuff than anything else. I think, you know, in terms of how to live your life type questions, I think we kind of covered that stuff. But if you had one or two questions, do you have one or two questions that you would say, if he walked in this room right now, these are the two questions, or this is what I would be really curious to know?
Oh, I got a number of questions. I mean, nothing like in terms of that I could just exactly, you know, regurgitate at the moment.
For sure.
But a number of my questions would be about you know, handling the head coaching life and how different it is in terms of, you know, hey, how did you deal with the fact that your days are not your own anymore? Yeah. You know, where you're basically, I mean, hey, we were supposed to meet today at 1 o'clock. You ended up coming in here at 7 a.m. And, you know, I had gotten done with my workout. I had finished some things, but, you know, your day changes so much. So, I mean, it'd be little things like that.
Yeah.
But I always felt like he did a great job of, you know, showing me what it is to be an adult and what it is to be a man and somebody to care for others.
Yeah.
So
did you feel like I felt like, cause I was, let's see, I'm 34 now. I was 32, I guess, when my mom died. Mm-hmm. And 32 years old, you're very much an adult, mm-hmm. and you have responsibilities and a profession and all these things. But I didn't really feel like I was an adult until my mom died. When my mom died, it was like,
I say that all the time,
man, I am on my own, and little things that I would ask her about, or even just like stupid stuff. Yeah. Hey, there's this like tax thing, or like little things that you would just like, oh, my mom has an answer for that.
Yeah.
And now she's gone.
I mean, I, you know, I come back to it, cause when you talk about, you know, you were 32 when she passed, you know, I was, you know, it will be coming up on 4 years, which I think is the fact that the years blur together and, you know, it's, you don't realize, like, it just feels like such a long period of time, or sometimes, or it feels like such a short period of time that, you know, sometimes you forget, like, hey, how long have I been without him? Like, it feels like forever, or man, it feels like yesterday. Like, that's how I'm feeling right now. Like, it, cause, you know, like I talked about, the weather's the same, the, you know, just the feeling of going back to work, the season's approaching, things like that. You know, so in that time, like, as it was happening, I don't think we necessarily ever really lost hope until like that day. I always felt like there was going to be some breakthrough. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's where the faith part comes into it. And you know, just the fact that, you know, we had faith, we prayed, we did, you know, everything that we felt we could. And then, you know, when you see it, you see that, hey, or you get the call from the doctor, like, today's the day. It's not happening. You need to rally everybody that you feel needs to be here. And it was a really peaceful moment when you passed. I mean, I remember we got we had probably close to 15, you know, 15 family and friends, maybe even close to 20 people that you know, they opened up a couple different hospital rooms. We had a big room. He loved Mountain Dew. We had somebody from the Timberwolves bring a Gatorade cooler of Mountain Dew in there.
That's awesome.
Some little things like that, and it was peaceful. But I remember the going home part after that. Like, it's like, what do you do now?
Oh my gosh.
You know? Yeah. And it's because it's, you know, you had that moment, you had the peaceful knowing that he's in a better place or she's in a better place. But then it's the, okay, now what happens? And that's where I think the real hardship really happens.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I think there's just this really weird, quiet period. But then there's the initial, like, people, and you and I have public jobs. And so, you know, people who we've never met, probably even at a higher mm-hmm. level for you, mm-hmm. but like when you're on the radio every day or you're talking mm-hmm. to people reach out and it's amazing.
Yeah.
But you can't expect that to last forever. And so that initial pouring out of support happens. And then there's another period of time after
Absolutely.
That where, and you know, and for people that don't have public jobs, you still get that support. Maybe it's on a lesser level, but then there's that second period of, okay, now that wave is gone and now you're sort of left to figure it out on your own again.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's the waves of grief and you know, the immediate, I guess, aftershock, and then you know, how people respond to it and people help you through it. It's all different. That's one of the things I've learned through all this is that, and I've had people that have passed, and that's, you know, I think that's one of the reasons you and I are sitting here as, you know, hey, the season starts in less than a week, but we felt it was really important to get these types of, it's a good time to get this out there.
Yeah.
As we come up, you know,
actually, I was going to spend the next 30 minutes just asking you about your offensive scheme.
Yeah, no, we already talked. That's not what we're doing today. It's important to get it out there because you know that some people are going to have those same feelings where I think my mother and I have talked at length about this, is that people do kind of leave. Like, everybody's there for you right away. And, you know, you can almost harbor a little bit of resentment, like, hey, they were there for me in the beginning, but then, you know, they just went on with their lives. But then you kind of realize, as time goes on, you realize, like, that's what they have to do. They can't be there for you the whole time.
Yeah. And
they
it's what we've done, in. I'm sure.
We've done it too. Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm thinking in my head, like, hey, I know this friend lost a parent. Like, I gotta call him after you leave here today.
Yeah.
You know, I gotta call a check on him. And because it's, you get on with your life, if there's somebody who, you know, wasn't necessarily in your everyday conversation in life, you're not always going to be there to help the family through or help. And so I think that's a message that I tell people, is that, you know, don't harbor any type of resentment if you feel like people aren't there. You know, I think one thing that I struggled with a little bit, and, you know, in a way it still does, it has been on my mind, is that you see the people that really loved you for you and not loved you for what your dad could try to do for them.
Yeah.
I felt
through
that. Cause I, you know, hey, I have a number of people that, you know, loved me and loved hanging out and loved seeing, you know, me when my dad was around, and then he passed away and they were kind of nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
It was almost like onto the next, you know, set of people that can help me out.
Yeah.
And that really hurt me. And that, it continues to be something that opens, that your eyes are open to what life is for some people.
And then I think there's also this layer of people that it's hard to know what to say mm-hmm. if you've never gone through it. I mean, obviously,
then
you,
that's
you meet
the other
someone
part.
who's in the club and you kind of know how to approach it. But if you've never gone through, and this applies to anything really, not just what we're talking about, losing a parent. But I guess my advice in that regard would be, there's nothing you can say to make it better. And that's okay. Like, I'm not sitting here 2 years ago expecting someone to come up to me and make me feel better.
Yeah.
But what I really appreciated was when people just asked questions about my mom.
Yeah.
When somebody was,
I agree with that.
There's nothing, like, I can't walk up to you and say, hey man, how is everything? Yeah. Well, it sucks.
Mm-hmm.
and that's fine. Like, it's supposed to suck. But if you come up and you ask, what was your mom like?
Yeah.
Or, what were your mom's hobbies?
Yeah.
Where did she like to travel?
Yeah.
I would beam and would love
Absolutely.
To talk about that stuff, right?
Yeah.
I think, I mean, again, advice to people, but
that would be a great angle to take when mm-hmm. someone goes through loss. I think most people want to talk about that person,
yeah.
and the initial instinct from the person approaching is, oh, they probably don't want to be reminded of this. They probably don't yep. want to talk about it. Yep. I mean, are you like me in that regard?
Absolutely.
I'd love to talk about it.
And you know, that's one of the things I learned, and this is probably good for you too right now, because, hey, 2 years, it's still raw. Mm-hmm. That is still raw. And so it's probably good talking about her right now. You know, I noticed, you know, just sitting across from you, you smile when you talk about her, mm-hmm. you know, loving Wheel of Fortune and things like that. You know, it's therapeutic. So, you know, I think I like when people do want to bring up, my dad, but I found I like it more when they want to bring up him as a person. They don't want to bring up him as, you know, hey, how are you like him as a basketball coach?
Right.
You know, and you understand the comparisons. If I can be anywhere near him, you know, I feel like I led a good life and a good coaching life. But, you know, I want to talk about him as a person, as a dad, not just him as a head coach in the NBA.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what I love doing. I love hearing stories. You know, I can just speak from my end is that the outpouring of, you know, stories from that were like sent to Brero on the Funkadelic or, you know, I know you guys had a number of people calling in. Just a lot of people, had called in and, or wrote me letters and just told about, hey, I remember one time I was walking through the Skyway and it was after a game and I saw your dad buy 10 boxes of Girl Scout cookies. But it was like just little moments like that you see that he was so common.
Yeah.
In an uncommon way, though.
Yeah.
That make you feel good. And it's not nothing that I don't think about him and his basketball accomplishments or anything. I think about his life, you know, the fact that we love wiffle ball games. In fact, I think about fishing. I think about, you know, we love going to late night movies. That was our big thing. I go to those movies alone now, but I still do it. And those are things that help you through it.
Yeah. So take basketball out of it. What are, when you talk about wanting to carry forward a legacy and you want to carry someone's spirit forward, what are the things that you've been a lot more conscious mm-hmm. about in the last handful of years?
Yeah. And I'll pose a question to you next then.
Yeah.
But it's kind of what your mom, talked about, you know, when you were talking about asking questions towards the end of her life, you realize not to take yourself so serious and not to take everything, know that not everything is completely, like, every decision that's made is life or death, because you've been through life or death. You've been through those types of decisions, those types of moments when you're, you know, I don't know about you, but I had moments where I was literally on my knees in a hospital room, you know, just looking up and not knowing what to say. Mm-hmm. And you've been through those. So the hard days now aren't as hard, because you realize what a hard day really is. And, you know, with that, I want to make sure I give credit to my mother, because she, you know, held the family together. But I want to, what they did, my father and mother, to try to help others and use basketball and use, you know, the responsibility of this job to do good in the community. I think that's one of the biggest things that I've learned, and that he would tell me today, is that it's not, you know, it's not just your life. You know, you got to help others. And, you know, in terms of continuing the legacy, you know, I don't look at it sitting in literally the same seat that this was his office mm-hmm. that I'm in now, which it's, I'm thankful for it, but I don't take it lightly each day when I walk in here. And to be able to sit in the chair that he was in, and he actually passed away, you know, not physically passed away in this chair, but like he was the owner of, you know, this job. You know, some people, a lot of times people ask, is that a hard thing to live up to? And I don't think necessarily, because you've been through life or death. Now it's just about doing the best that you can, and it's not and carrying on the legacy of the person, not necessarily their accomplishments.
Yeah.
I mean, how about you? What would you say about carrying on a legacy?
I think the way you put it, with the fact that you had days where you were on your knees mm-hmm. and you felt like,
I don't even know what tomorrow is going to bring. And I think earlier on here in our conversation, you even mentioned the question, what's the point? And you really start asking yourself questions like that.
Yeah.
And I guess, and to follow up too with what you said, my family support system, from fiance to stepdad to dad to step family and aunt in California, I'm lucky to have, and then my future in-laws. Like, I've got family in Milwaukee, Minnesota, you know, California, Arizona. And so I feel like I've, it sounds stupid, I feel like I have family around the country, and even though I'm an only child. So leaning on those people, but in terms of carrying forward, and I guess how you, how your perspective changes and maybe how you change as a person, I have zero time anymore for things that don't matter. And I don't mean in like a dismissive way.
No, you're right.
I don't sweat things that don't matter. But and I will catch myself. I've had a couple moments, even like, so, you know, we've launched this new Score North brand, and we're building a multimedia platform that we hope can be a 10 to 15 year model. And like, there's a lot of moments when you're building something, and you guys are building something with the Wolves, when you get caught up and your identity gets caught up in work sometimes, and you have to check yourself and say, you know what? Yeah, I'm gonna pour myself into this, and I'm gonna make sure that this is the best it can be, and that I'm helping all the people that work for me and around me.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, that shouldn't be your identity, right? There's other more important things that you should be pouring your energy into as well, and little things that. Even little things, and I started reading The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle 12 years ago, and so I started planting some of these seeds just in my own mind, just after college, catching myself getting too caught up in things that didn't matter. Like, you're in traffic, and you're going to be 5 minutes late.
Yeah.
Instead of pounding the wheel and getting mad and cussing, and well, I mean, all you're doing is creating more suffering, right?
Yeah.
So I think when you go through something like this, you really have more perspective on what matters, what doesn't, and how to be present and prioritize.
Yeah. Let me ask you, did you always have that view after she had passed, or did it take some time for you to get to this point?
I think I had, thanks in large part to her, I think I had built enough of a base of, it was hard, don't get me wrong, but I think I had built up enough of a base in my life leading up to that point of, okay, actually I'm going to use a sports metaphor here, or a sports comparison. I had a chance to do a podcast with George Mumford, sports psychologist George Mumford, for the audience. I bring him up on our show sometimes because I just think he's a fascinating figure. He was Phil Jackson's mental coach for Bulls teams and Lakers teams. And from a sports perspective, he talked on the podcast we did about the greatest basketball players and athletes and high performers being able to put space between what he calls the mechanism and the response. So space between what happens, or pressure, or whatever it is, that, like, whatever the external thing is, and how you react to it. And I think it really helps if you can just have an idea of, all right, things are going to happen in your life. You're never going to live 75 or 80 years. And you can take this as macro or micro as you want. You're not going to get through a day without spilling coffee, or, you know, being late in a traffic jam, or if, like, something doesn't go your way professionally. Just like as you zoom out in life, you're not going to get away never losing someone close to you, never getting fired, or whatever it is, right? So I think the more that you can just anticipate, not in a paranoid cynical way, but anticipate bad things are going to happen, and the only thing I can control is how I react and spin off of those bad things. And I sort of knew the concept of that before my mom died, but that was the first time where, whoa, this is in practice now. And it can't just be like a book that I read a few years ago. You have to live this every day, and then spin it forward in a productive way.
The initial shock of, you know, losing somebody, you know, I feel like you're gonna get some strength, though. You get strength when you got people around, when people are dropping, you know, dinner off for you, when people are, you know, you get with your family, hey, we're getting through this. As we talked about, as things kind of start wearing off, you know, for me, some of the hardest moments were like 2-3 months after that, because then as everything starts kind of going down, you have to get back to your regular life. A number of things, and you kind of, in a way, you start thinking about like, okay, you think about what was in the past, and then you're like, okay, how do I get back to that? How do I feel like that again?
Yeah.
And you realize that it's going to be impossible because you're missing a big part of, you know, what your life was and who you are in a way. And, you know, I'd encourage people to, hey, reach out to somebody. You know, professional help is okay.
I did that, by the way.
I did that too. And I'm not, you know, I want to make sure to, I'm very proud of that because I think what that does is that shows a level of maturity and a level of awareness to of self-help when you're like, hey, I can't do this on my own. I don't want to continue to, I want to be there. You got to take care of yourself. You got to take care of yourself before you can help take care of others. I think, you know, I have three younger sisters, my mother, my wife and I, we're not together at the time during that. So it was pretty much us, and they were my life. And I realized pretty quickly that for me to be able to help them, I had to help myself.
Yeah.
And so I think that's something that I want to make sure to get through as you and I talked, as you have, you know, listeners, you know, hey, don't be afraid to, you know, go reach out in other ways, because there's no shame in anything. It's about, you got to take care of yourself too, and be a little bit selfish in a way.
Yeah. And if there's things that you have to talk through and work out, you know, you can talk through and work out some of that stuff with the people around you, your wife, your spouse, whatever, but you're also, you don't, they have to live their life too. And they can't be your psychologist.
Yeah.
They're there to help you. But if there's stuff that you, and I, the same way, I actually started seeing someone like 3 months before she passed away, sort of anticipating, all right, there's about to be some big life shifts here. It's one of the best decisions mm-hmm. I've ever made.
Yeah.
And
now you're engaged.
Yeah, exactly.
Congrats, man.
Thank you.
It's awesome.
And there were times when, you know, when I would start to use my now fiance as my psychologist.
Yeah.
And she would say, as tactfully as she could, you know, we can't, like, this can't just be the dynamic all the time.
Yeah.
Like, I'm here for
smart.
You, but, like, you should have someone else. Mm-hmm. And she was 100% right.
Yeah.
So
let's talk about some good things, too.
For sure.
Right now, as you talk about that, and I'll have to talk about my wife quick. So I had met her in college, and she, I always say she was a smarter woman back in college because she didn't want to date me. but she, I'm joking when I say that. But we had been talking previously, getting back in touch. When I had just kind of moved back to Minnesota, we had kind of been friends. And then my dad, once things deteriorated, we kind of almost lost a little bit of touch at that time because we weren't in a space where, hey, come by and see him, come by, anything like that. It was kind of a, like, hey, I got to focus on him
yeah.
with things. So we actually, you know, like probably close to a month after he had passed, I ended up meeting her on our first official date, McCormick's in downtown YZ, and it was pouring rain. our first official date. And, we talk about it now where she's like, I didn't know if it was right. You know, you had just, your dad had just passed and stuff. And I didn't know me. I still think of it being a blur because, you know, you're numb. You're looking for something to look forward to.
Yeah.
And for me, she was my thing to look forward to then. And we just obviously, and she was incredible. The way she stepped into such an intense space with my mother, my sisters, myself. You know, I give her, I say all the time, she saved my life and she probably saved my career too.
Yeah.
In terms of, I don't know, who knows what you feel if you want to continue on doing what you're doing, being reminded of your dad every day, if you don't have that thing to look forward to.
Yeah.
And, you know, we fast forward, long story short, she ends up, you know, agreeing to marry me. Now we got a 3-month-old kid and, son, which is Lucas Phillip. Philip, obviously my dad's first name. That's his middle name. I didn't want having a grandpa and a dad as an NBA head coach. I didn't want the kid to feel like he has to live up to that. So we put Philip in the middle name. But my point is that there's beauty through like the depth of your despair if you can continue to push through it and you're just aware of your feelings through all of that. I mean, yeah. Do you feel a little bit of that?
Yes. I feel like. So we've actually been together for 7 years, and we, you know, just like we had always
we knew that we wanted to be together for the long haul. And then marriage didn't start to really come up until after my mom died. And it was, I think it's, you realize, and I'm not here to say that, well, if you're only together for a year or 2 years, you shouldn't get married. I'm not saying that. But I think there's something amazing about going through a bunch of crap in your life with someone and then seeing on both sides how the other person responds and steps up and helps.
Yeah.
That just solidifies, yep, this is my person.
Hey, we were together for less than a year, my wife and I.
But also, she had jumped into a tumultuous time in your life.
Yeah.
And you see, when you go through adversity and you're going through tumultuous periods in your life, you really do, to kind of what you were saying earlier, you really do, it brings out either the best or the worst in people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a really, it's a character gauge.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And it's, you know, I don't know if he didn't pass, who knows if I'm ready to be married at that time. There's things like that hey, we were loving life. I was back here in Minnesota, with my best friend in terms of my dad. Like we were trying to build a team.
Yeah.
It was fun. We were loving it, and like it was perfect. And then all this happened, and you're looking for something else. And somebody comes along and who completely changes your life for the better in the worst, time period of your life. Mm-hmm. And, that's the only thing that possible explanation for that is the fact that, there's a higher power and that God is looking out for us. And not to get too into that, I want to be respectful of everybody's beliefs, but I want to make sure that I let that be known that my faith is the only thing that pushed me through all this, and my faith in it is the reason that my wife was sent here for me. She always says, she's like, I felt a nudge, it was probably your dad. She always says that, and that just makes me emotional when I think of that.
Yeah, man. Well, let's wrap with, I'll start and you follow me up with this. Let's just, any other remaining pieces of thoughts or advice, mm-hmm. or how do we pay it forward? How do we, as we sit in this club, and if you've made it through this show or this podcast, you're probably part of the club, or you're just like, or you're just captivated by grief and us flushing this out, I guess. But I would say the three things that I've learned the most about in the last couple of years, and what I want to continue to carry forward. And if somebody was sitting down and they had a loved one that was on the ropes in that same situation that we were in, I would say, let people be there for you.
Mm-hmm.
To remove your guard and let people be there for you. Carry on the mission and the spirit of the person that you're losing in whatever way that is for you. Flip, in other words, sort of flip it inside out. Instead of feeling the heavy burden and the weight of the grief, try to flip it inside out and be proactive about it.
Mm-hmm.
How do I turn this inside out, and how do I take all of the great things about that person and charge forward in my own way?
Mm-hmm.
And then number three would be prioritize things and people that matter.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to have a power ranking list in your, den or anything, but have perspective. And to borrow some advice from my mom, don't sweat things that aren't relevant in your short period of time on this earth.
Yeah.
I say this all the time, and people around me probably think it's corny, but you are a speck of dust.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back at how long has the earth been around, and you're going to be here for this flash of time, what do you really want to focus on? So I think those are the things that I try to internalize in my day to day now.
I think those are perfect. That's a perfect way to kind of wrap this conversation up, because those are things I had something along those lines, just in things that I would share with people. I talk about, it's okay to rely on people going through the grief, going through also the anticipation of the grief. It's okay to rely on people, and let people help you. Don't feel like you got to do it all on your own. And then, when the day does come, if the day is inevitable, if there's a listener that just had that day, once you start working through the, hey, this happened to me, how could this happen to me? All that, then I'd say, and once you recognize, I'm being very, I'm not trying to pull myself out of this. I'm just kind of letting life come and just kind of happen to me. That's when you'll start feeling a change. And that, you know, I also tell people that there are better days to come, like in terms of, you know, don't lose hope. Don't lose hope in the grief, because there's ways to find some beautiful things through it all. And I don't know what those beautiful things are. It's different for every person, but there are some great things. But the last thing I'd say that we try to do here with the Timberwolves now, I bring it back to work a little bit, but also I try to do it in everyday life, is a goal of mine. Treat people better than they've ever been treated.
Yeah.
And that's just a simple, like, hey, make somebody feel, you know, the cashier at Starbucks, the parking lot attendant, whoever, treat somebody better than they've ever been treated. You know, don't go through life just being, hey, good morning. If somebody says good morning, like, hey, how you doing? You know, like, hey, good morning to you too. You know, engage in life, because the joy and the love from other people will come back to you. And that's how you carry a legacy on, showing that you are and being a good person and contributing to this world.
Yeah. Thanks for sitting down, man.
Yeah. Yeah. This is good. Yeah. Therapeutic in a way.
It is. It is, yeah. Therapeutic. And hopefully whoever's listening finds value in it too. And
yeah.
And I would say, you know, our idea was, let's just sit down and let's have this conversation and let's flush it out.
Yeah.
But if you guys are listening out there, and you give us some feedback.
Yeah,
absolutely. You can always tweet at me. Not to.
I don't have social media, plugs, so.
Yeah, tweet at me and I'll relay that to Ryan. But just at Phil Mackey, or you can email me at pmackey@scorenorth.com, scornorth.com, and send us your feedback. And I don't know if there's other things that you'd want to, that the audience wants to tap into with this. Maybe we can do another one at some point, and we'll see what happens.
No, definitely. It's a credit to you, too, to be vulnerable like this and put this out there. Because these are experiences that obviously are very hard to relive in a way, but I think the fact that you want to use this to help others too, your mother be proud.
Yeah. Likewise, my friend.
All right.
All right.